Despite what Exxon might have suggested, the big picture science of climate change has been clear for years. Carbon dioxide and other kinds of pollution from human activity help trap more heat in the atmosphere. That warms up the planet. There is uncertainty, though, about some of the details, things like how all that warming is affecting the natural systems of the Earth. Permafrost, for example, the freezer of the planet. And you know what it's like when you leave your freezer door open for a while. The Arctic is the freezer we're looking at. The world is focusing on the Arctic and climate change in a bunch of stories produced with the podcast Threshold and its host, Amy Martin. Today, Amy heads to northern Sweden with researchers looking at some of the big questions about permafrost.
I'm sitting in the middle of a rowboat in northern Sweden. It's a lovely summer day. There are flocks of birds circling around me in the sky, and I'm just sitting there like a tourist in Venice.
Who knew that climate change research could be so much fun?
We have so much fun in the boat when me and Jenny go out.
That's Matilda Nisal. She and Jenny Goling trade off doing the rowing. They're master's students at Stockholm University, and they're studying Arctic permafrost, soil that's been frozen all year round for at least 2 years. They're measuring the gases that permafrost releases when it thaws, as it's starting to do, because these are some of the same gases that help to warm up the climate. Joachim Janssen is leading this project. He's working on his PhD at the same school.
We are looking at the methane gas bubbling from the lake sediment into the atmosphere.
Usually, when we talk about climate warming emissions, we're thinking of the stuff coming out of our cars or smokestacks. But all around the Arctic, in beautiful places like this, powerful greenhouse gases are starting to escape into the atmosphere, and they're coming from permafrost.
The amount of carbon that's stored in here is twice the amount that we have in the atmosphere. And so if that would all be released into the atmosphere, that would mean a huge climatic change for sure.
When you say the amount of carbon we have stored here is twice what's in the atmosphere, you mean the amount of carbon we have in the Arctic?
Yeah, just in Arctic permafrost.
In Arctic permafrost?
Permafrost soils, yeah.
Wow.
This is a statistic worth remembering, so let me put it another way. Take all the carbon currently floating around in the atmosphere and put it in one bucket, then scoop up all of the carbon currently frozen in Arctic permafrost, and it would fill two buckets of the same size. Not far away from the lake, Geisha Blumaveri is stabbing the soil with a long metal pole.
It's called a permafrost probe, so this is a steel rod. So this gives us an indication of how much of the soil is frozen or not frozen.
Geisha is an ecosystem ecologist, and she's been researching Arctic plants here in Abisko, Sweden, for the last 6 years. She hasn't pushed the probe into the soil very far at all before it hits something. Something that sounds like a big rock.
This is not a stone. This is frozen soil.
She pulls the probe back out.
And then if you touch this...
Wow!
It's really, really cold.
That's a trip.
In just a few seconds, the end of the pole has become so cold that it's uncomfortable to touch. It's almost eerie, like it picked up a message for us from a hidden world right under our feet, the world of permafrost. It can be anywhere from a meter to a kilometer thick. It can be very, very cold or just barely frozen. And all around the Arctic, it's starting to thaw. You might have seen some of the pictures, roads that are sinking and buckling, homes shifting and cracking, and trees tilting at awkward angles, giving rise to the label drunken forests. In fact, there's a line of telephone poles next to the meadow where Geisha and I are standing, and one of them looks a little drunken too.
That one that is kind of tilting now, that is probably standing in an area where the permafrost is just disappearing now, so they will have to redo that soon.
For people who live in the Arctic, these changes are a really big deal. In many northern cultures, cellars cut into the permafrost have been a reliable way to store food. It becomes nature's freezer. Now, people can't always trust that their food won't spoil. And thawing permafrost affects all of the newer kinds of infrastructure, too. Not only buildings, but water mains, sewage drains, even cemeteries. Communities are scrambling to adapt as the ground literally shifts beneath them. But Geisha says permafrost is important to all of us, no matter where we live, because it's providing a globally important service, keeping carbon out of the atmosphere, free of charge.
So the permafrost that we have here was formed probably during the last ice age, so like 11,000 years or so ago. And that material in the permafrost is that old. Like, it is made up out of plant material from plants that used to grow at that time.
And the remains of dead animals are in this soil, too. Not fossilized bones or petrified wood, the actual stuff. And all of this organic material has a lot of carbon in it. In fact, that's what the word organic means. Organic chemistry is carbon chemistry. So when Geisha says this soil has a lot of dead plants in it, she means...
We've put our carbon in the freezer.
Yeah, we have. And now we are unfortunately kind of taking the plug out of the freezer and it's starting to thaw.
And so then once permafrost starts to truly thaw, then carbon just kind of comes... Like, how does the carbon get from down there to up into the atmosphere?
Because microbes are eating it and they are respiring, so they are breathing. Basically, and then they emit carbon.
So it's microbe breath that we have to worry about.
Yeah, basically.
Microbes. When living things die, microbes begin breaking them down, and the carbon that was locked up in a blade of grass or the horn of a bison gets liberated and floats up into the atmosphere as methane or carbon dioxide. Freezing slows microbes down, but it doesn't kill them. Thawing speeds them back up. Back at the lake, Matilda rows us up close to a big funnel floating upside down in the water. It has a big syringe fitted onto the skinny end, sticking up. These little contraptions look pretty homemade, because they are.
The way we make them float is by using pool noodles, things you would use in the swimming pool.
So you take your funnel, turn it upside down, wrap a piece of pool noodle around the wide part, and put a plastic syringe on the top. And you've got yourself a little trap designed to capture gases bubbling up from the lake below. Matilda rows us up to another trap, and Joachim reaches over the side of the boat with a syringe in his hand.
So he's pulling out the gas. What'd you find there?
So we had about 7 milliliters of gas. So this used to be in the lake sediment, where it formed a bubble. And that bubble traveled through the water into our trap, and now it's in the syringe.
They've likely captured a mixture of gases.
Most of which will likely be methane, but we're not sure, so we take these to the lab and then we measure the actual methane concentration.
Methane is a powerful greenhouse gas, and these scientists have 40 of these bubble traps on this lake and a bunch more nearby. They check all of them multiple times a week, all summer long, and this is all just to understand how much methane is coming off this one small area this year, under these particular conditions. Groups of scientists are at work around the Arctic, studying sites that are wetter or drier, colder or warmer, with more or less vegetation. And they're all trying to understand just how quickly these billions of tons of carbon might be released.
I think the scary part is that we don't know what an extra 4 degrees of warming will do to this huge amount of carbon that's stored here in the permafrost. We are trying to actively to figure that out.
Joachim says it's hard to accurately assess greenhouse emissions from Arctic soil because the whole system is so complex. But it's also hard because humans have never warmed the planet up like we are now. We have nothing to compare this to. At least from our species' perspective, we're in what climate scientists call a no-analog situation, a massive global experiment.
There's a knob that we turn on that big Arctic permafrost machine that we don't know what it does. And until we actually figure out what it does, it may be a good idea to stop turning the knob.
If you have a warming of 1 degree, that makes all the difference in the world because it gets from frozen to thawed. And that is something that us scientists are really worried about because there are many thresholds that you might cross there.
Geisha Blumaberry says that in many parts of the Arctic, the permafrost has already thawed enough to start emitting carbon. And in other places, the frozen soil is right on the cusp of that pivot point, where a change of 1 or 2 degrees can transform it from being something that stores carbon to something that emits it.
We might tip the scales of these really large exchanges, then it can have really dramatic consequences. It's not about saving the polar bear. I think a lot of people, when they think about climate change, they're like, yeah, you know, some plants will disappear, and the polar bear, yeah, I mean, it's cute. But it's also about, like, us surviving as a species, because if it gets much warmer, like the way that we have evolved with our agriculture and how we, like the food that we eat and where we live, is just not adapted to that.
We don't know how close we are to a massive release of carbon from frozen Arctic soils, but we do know that every bit of carbon we emit into the atmosphere gets us closer to that point. Scientists call it a positive feedback loop. More carbon in the air leads to more warming, which leads to the release of more carbon, and the process just builds on itself. Another thing we know is that we don't get a second chance at this. Once our emissions potentially trigger this huge release of carbon, we've put ourselves at the mercy of processes that we can't control and that will dramatically reshape the Earth's climate and our own civilizations. I asked Joachim if he thought there was any way to stop this experiment we're conducting on the Arctic, or if he thought the damage was already done, and now we just have to ride it out.
No, we have an ability to say stop. Of course we do. We have choices. And I think especially in the Western world, in the rich world, we have choices and therefore we have a responsibility. And one of the ways is to try and understand this experiment better. And that's my part, that's what we do here. And the other part is acting on what we already know, which is stop putting so much greenhouse gases in the atmosphere. Yeah, I think we have a responsibility and I think we can act.
For The World, Amy Martin, Abisko, Sweden.
Amy's reporting comes to us through our partnership with the Threshold podcast and radio program with funding support from the Pulitzer Center. You can check out the rest of Amy's stories at theworld.org/thebigmelt.